In a quiet corner outside the barracks, the joy of a family reunited, even though it's just for a few minutes. 8-year-old Timothy carrying prosthetic spare parts for his father, who likes to be called Sailor.
Low by the mine, Russian mine.
Sailor lost his left leg 2 years ago when he was in the Ukrainian Marines. He rejoined the army a few days ago. Timothy is not fully aware of the scale of the Russian onslaught because his mother doesn't let him watch the news.
I didn't feel comfortable at first, especially sleeping in the corridor, but I'm getting used to it. School stopped, so now I spend my days in the corridor doing nothing, watching videos on the phone and reading books sometimes. But today, we will go to help the volunteers.
Civilians from all walks of life are pitching in, supporting soldiers like Timothy, his father, and providing assistance to Ukrainians fleeing Kharkiv or southern Ukraine. The volunteers are frantic as they grasp the enormity of the Russian assault on their country. Among them, Natalia. She usually manages a shoe company, but is now putting together kits containing basic necessities.
People need everything. Clothes, hygiene goods, shaving kits, toothpaste and toothbrushes. They are coming here without anything. Their homes are destroyed, so all they have is the clothes they're wearing.
Dnipro has so far remained safe, but this city is bracing itself. Public shelters are being prepared all over the city. This is the underground of a movie theater that was built in the 1950s when Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union, and already then it was designated as a bomb shelter. During that Cold War era, the stated threat was from Western powers. It's stuffy with poor ventilation, but it will have to do. The city is under a night curfew. Sailor tells me it's to prevent the possibility of Russian agents carrying out acts of subversion. And despite his handicap, he says he will fight to the bitter end. He believes Russia's ambitions are far greater than Ukraine.
If you look at history, starting from Transnistria in Moldova, Georgia, and then Donbass, he is protecting his borders with the help of the so-called self-proclaimed republics. I have to protect my home and my family because people like me have little chance to survive in the case of a Russian invasion here.
Many in Dnipro are wondering what President Vladimir Putin's plans are for the city. With the Russian army advancing from the south and north, many believe the quiet they have now could soon be broken. Hoda Abdelhamid, Al Jazeera, Dnipro in eastern Ukraine.
France's finance minister has declared an all-out economic and financial war against Russia, but the thing that's not under international sanctions, for now anyway, is Russian oil. The world's third largest producer and the other members of OPEC Plus have decided to stick with a plan to raise output by 400,000 barrels a day in April, gradually returning to pre-pandemic levels. US benchmark crude oil is at a 7-year high, at nearly $110 a barrel. That's despite additional supply being released by the US and other IEA countries. The US wanted actually a bigger hike in order to limit inflation. Consumer prices across the Eurozone increased by a record 5.8%. Let's go live now to the New York Stock Exchange. Al Jazeera's Gabe Elizondo is there. Stocks up, what? Ooh, 0.2% on the day off their earlier highs, Gabe. What's happening there right now?
Yeah, the markets seem to be rebounding after dropping about 2% here in the United States on Tuesday. So the market seems to be stabilizing somewhat, at least for the morning here in New York. The big question is oil, and that's what everyone is watching very closely. As you mentioned, oil prices jumping to about $113 a barrel at one point. But let's put this a little bit in context here. This is a very critical moment for the oil markets. And in other geopolitical uncertainty we've seen in the past years and decades, we've seen oil prices spike. That's not particularly unusual. What is unusual about this time, according to analysts, is two things very unique are happening. Number one is these sanctions that have been levied against Russia by dozens of countries in Europe and the United States and elsewhere are devastating. And while these sanctions do not directly, keyword directly, target the energy sector in Russia, they indirectly are affecting it. So how do you get oil out of Russia are big key questions now. So these sanctions are having an effect on oil prices, even though the sanctions don't directly affect the oil market in Russia. Number two is these sanctions are against not just any country, but against the world's second or third largest producer and exporter of oil, and that's Russia. So take those two things combined, and that's why you're seeing prices of oil surge. And according to analysts here in the United States that follow this closely, they are saying they foresee potentially a day where oil very soon could reach $125 to even $135 or $45 a barrel. Now, last thing I'll say is to keep in context here is that the United States and 30 other allies announced they're going to release 60 million barrels of oil from the strategic reserves. That sounds like a lot. That is a lot. But it was not nearly enough to bring down the prices. That's because the world consumes about 100 million barrels of oil a day. So you can see that the predicament that many countries, oil-consuming countries, are in right now, trying to bring these prices down.
All right, Gabe, many thanks indeed. Al Jazeera's Gabriel Elizondo there, live at the New York Stock Exchange. Marusha Takin is an international oil and energy consultant. He was a research officer at OPEC in Vienna and joins us now live from London. Good to have you with us. Before we talk about the politics of oil, I just want to clear something up. We all know that the price of gas is rising at the petrol pump where we go to fill up the car. What do we actually mean when we talk about the price of oil?
The price of oil is the price of crude oil, which is, as announced, $113 a barrel and could go to higher and higher. But when in the United States consumers talk about gas, is the petrol, is the gasoline, and that, of course, is a petroleum product. And that is subjected to local market conditions. But oil is an integrated international market. And although there are variations within each country on the product market, overall, even if there is enough oil in the United States, when the price goes up in the international market, the price goes up in the gasoline pumps in the United States as well. So that is answer to your question on what we mean by the price of oil and the oil market.
Okay.
And as you said, there was was told by your colleague, by the commentator, is very elegantly, that there is a fear that there could be shortage of oil being traded around the world because of embargoes, sanctions on U.S. ships and those who trade in U.S. and U.S. banking and financials and so on. At present, there is no cutoff of oil from export from Russia, but there is a fear for it. And always in the oil market, the fear and perception of shortage or extra or excess oil always affects the market, the price immediately.
All right. So,
and has done today.
So they may be panicking about nothing at all. It may not actually come to fruition. But if it did, if sanctions were placed against Russian oil exports, Russian oil companies, could the world survive without Russian oil, given that it's the world's, third largest producer?
Well, it depends on how much. It's 7 million barrels, let's say, rough number of Russian oil exports. And this cannot be replaced. As you heard, the International Energy Agency, using the Strategic Petroleum Reserves, coordinated policy of North America, Europe, Japan, and so on, is only 60 million barrels that they are getting out of there. So it cannot be replaced. So the prices will go up higher and higher. It could go, as was mentioned, 120, 130. You know, we have experienced $147 a barrel price of oil in July, if I remember, 2014. At that time, there were other reasons. There was actual supply shortage, et cetera, et cetera. So if there is shortage, the prices will
go. Okay. So why hasn't OPEC Plus stepped up production? Why is it sticking its plan to gradually raise output to just 400,000 barrels a day by April to pre-pandemic levels?
There are a number of reasons. One is that the OPEC is together with the so-called OPEC plus, non-OPEC countries. The major one is Russia. In fact, the deputy chairman of the OPEC plus meeting, committee or coordination group is the Deputy Prime Minister of Russia. And so the OPEC members, the major one, the kingpin being Saudi Arabia, they have been working together with Mr. Novak from Russia for the last 2-3 years. And that led, because let's forget there was a excess oil, the price of oil collapsed in 2020 because of COVID and so on. And the world was pleading OPEC plus OPEC plus and so on to do something. And they did. They reduced supply to get the price up. Now, of course, it's the other way around. So in response to the increase in demand after that crisis, oil price shortage or oil price collapse, they decided about a year ago, this group, that every month they would increase 400,000 barrels per day their production. And in their meeting today, they decided to continue that annual, that monthly increase again. And that will go on, that will start from the beginning of April, and then by May and so on, they may have a different policy and so on. So it is coordinated between this group. And so based on that, they didn't want to rock the boat. What their statement was, they believe there was enough supply at present in the market. Yeah. And as I explained, the high price is because of a fear of shortage. So they said, we don't want to flood the market. There is no need to increase beyond the 400,000 barrels.
Okay. It's been really good to talk to you, sir. I've learned a lot. Many thanks. Marucia Takin there in London.